All right, this week's Parsha is Parsha Vayikra, which of course introduces the book of Vayikra, which deals with the service in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan, and the Mikdash deals with the sacrificial part of the of Judaism, service in the temple, which of course is on the surface is very distant from us because A, we have not seen such service in 2,000 years, A, and B, the phenomena of animal sacrifice seems bizarre, strange, and distant from us. And in previous classes, I've dealt with that, it's a previous class you can check online discussing that issue. But here, I'm really going to focus a little bit on the opening sentence of the parsha, which you would think, like, how much could one talk about the opening, 6-7 words of the parsha? But you would be wrong about that. So we're going to deal with we're going to do something on the focus of the first pasuk, first verse of the parsha. But the topic is called listening to live, and we're going to start off with a video quote. We're going to look this is a little portion of a TED talk. So bear with me here.
Well, there are a lot of reasons for this. First of all, we invented ways of recording. First, writing. Then audio recording, and now video recording as well, the premium on accurate and careful listening has simply disappeared. Secondly, the world is now so noisy, with this cacophony going on visually and auditorily, it's just hard to listen. It's tiring to listen. Many people take refuge in headphones, but they turn big public spaces like this, shared soundscapes, into millions of tiny little personal sound bubbles. In this scenario, nobody's listening to anybody. We're becoming impatient. We don't want oratory anymore. We want sound bites. And the art of conversation is being replaced, dangerously, I think, by personal broadcasting. I don't know how much listening there is in this conversation, which is sadly very common, especially in the UK. We're becoming desensitized. Our media have to scream at us with these kind of headlines in order to get our attention. And that means it's harder for us to pay attention to the quiet, the subtle, the understated. This is a serious problem that we're losing our listening. This is not trivial. Because listening is our access to understanding. Conscious listening always creates understanding. And only without conscious listening can these things happen. A world where we don't listen to each other at all is a very scary place indeed. So I'd like to share with you 5 simple exercises, tools you can take away with you to improve your own conscious listening. Would you like that? Good. The first one is silence. Just 3 minutes a day of silence is a wonderful exercise to reset your ears and to recalibrate so that you can hear the quiet again. If you can't get absolute silence, go for quiet. That's absolutely fine. Second, I call this the mixer. So even if you're in a noisy environment like this, and we all spend a lot of time in places like this, listen in the coffee bar to how many channels of sound can I hear? How many individual channels in that mix am I listening to? You can do it in a beautiful place as well, like a lake. How many birds am I hearing? Where are they? Where are those ripples? It's a great exercise for improving the quality of your listening. Third, this exercise I call savoring, and this is a beautiful exercise. It's about enjoying mundane sounds. This, for example, is my tumble dryer. It's a waltz. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I love it. Or just try this one on for size. So mundane sounds can be really interesting if you pay attention. I call that the hidden choir. It's around us all the time. The next exercise is probably the most important of all of these. If you just take one thing away, this is listening positions. The idea that you can move your listening position to what's appropriate to what you're listening to. This is playing with those filters. Remember I gave you those filters at the beginning? It's starting to play with them as levers to get conscious about them and to move to different places. These are just some of the listening positions or scales of listening positions that you can use. There are many. Have fun with that. It's very exciting. And finally, an acronym. You can use this in listening in communication if you're in any one of those roles, and I think that probably is everybody who's listening to this talk. The acronym is RASA, which is the Sanskrit word for juice or essence. And RASA stands for receive, which means pay attention to the person, appreciate, making little noises like, summarize, the word so is very important in communication, and ask questions afterwards. Now, sound is my passion, it's my life, I wrote a whole book about it, so I live to listen. That's too much to ask for most people. But I believe that every human being needs to listen consciously in order to live fully. Connected in space and in time to the physical world around us, connected in understanding to each other, not to mention spiritually connected, because every spiritual path I know of has listening and contemplation at its heart. That's why we need to teach listening in our schools as a skill. Why is it not taught? It's crazy. And if we can teach listening in our schools, we can take our listening off that slippery slope to that dangerous, scary world that I talked about and move it to a place where everybody is consciously listening all the time, or at least capable of doing that. Now, I don't know how to do that, but this is TED. And I think the TED community is capable of anything. So I invite you to connect with me, connect with each other, take this mission out, and let's get listening taught in schools and transform the world in one generation to a conscious listening world, a world of connection, a world of understanding, and a world of peace. Thank you for listening to me today.
All right. All right, now we get some questions. Okay, 1 second. Very nice. Beautiful. Fantastic. Okay. Here we go. Back to our sheet. Here we go. Now. All right, so here we go. So, basically, in our louder and louder world, says sound expert Julian Treasure, that's the guy you heard, we are losing our listening. In this short, fascinating talk, Treasure shares 5 ways to retune your ears for conscious listening to other people and the world around you. Here's my question. Why are we losing our listening? Name 3 reasons.
Short attention span?
It's
like the soundbite phenomenon.
Right. So we have no patience.
Right.
You know, I want everything to be reduced down to 5 seconds. Okay? What else? That's correct. So therefore, people want everything that's soundbite. There's no the sense of having proper, or thoughtful conversation is basically gone. Just let me ask you a question. In all synagogues, conservative, reform, orthodox, in 1950, what was the average sermon length in a typical synagogue on a Saturday?
45 minutes.
45 minutes is correct. A typical rabbi's goal, doesn't always get there, for a typical Shabbos drasha now?
10 minutes?
12.
12 minutes is correct. Danielle, you're knocking it out. Exactly right. 12 minutes is correct. Because what is the longest duration of a TED Talk? They have a cutoff. Anybody know? 18 minutes. After 18 minutes, nobody's listening. And also, if you can't give over one idea in 18 minutes, you know, that's a fundamental lack of a clarity of idea. So, in general, people's tolerance, patience, etc. is reduced, and therefore, everything has to be reduced down to its smallest amount. What other reasons why people are not listening? Or losing their listening. One at a time. All right, Adam.
They have enough going on in their own lives. They just don't want to hear what I was about to say.
Right, so that was, for example, that he brought up the issue of the internet. People are basically self-broadcasting. They're just, you know, on social media. Person either puts up a video or shares stuff. Online, they say that most 80% of what people talk about themselves online. 80%. While in regular conversation, it's more balanced. Like, you know, this is what I have to say. What do you have to say? You know, there's more of a sharing it's more of a dialogue. What other reason? Another common reason. Yes, Danielle.
We're just not communicating the same way we used to.
Okay. Which means?
Well, so he used the example of people texting. But people are, and I think it is tied to being distracted, but people aren't having the same types of conversations in person or just speaking on the phone as they used to.
Correct. Right. Communication has changed dramatically, and therefore it's short, it's curt, it's impersonal. But the first thing is that we're in a very distracted world. We're bombarded by messages, bombarded by content. So therefore, just as a way of self-preservation, people need to withdraw into their own personal cocoon, i.e., the people walking through Manhattan with earphones on, basically, which is most people, they're in their own little, they're listening to their own soundtrack of their own life, and they're not listening. By definition, they're sort of opted out of everybody else, and they're listening to their own little self-world, whatever that may be. Okay, now, he made the following assertion: conscious listening creates understanding. What is meant by that phrase? It's a very important concept. Moshe Chaim does. What does that mean?
By carefully listening to what's around you and appreciating it, you can process it and have it become meaningful to you rather than just prioritizing your intakes of information from different sources.
What percent, to bolster that point, what percent is the what is the retention rate of our listening? He opened up the video with it. What?
25%.
25%. We are absorbing, capturing, understanding 25% of what people are saying. When I hear that, basically, all these classes have been, you know, 75% failure. But correct. In other words, to actively listen and thoughtfully process is becoming a lost art. And then he ended off his little thing, which I felt valuable. What's his rasa phrase? His little, what are the, let's see, what does the four letters stand for?
Receive, appreciate, summarize, ask.
Receive, appreciate, summarize, and ask. Correct. All right, so what does receive mean?
Listen. Conscious listening.
No, but this is all part of the con. This is all part. He broke it down into four parts. So what's the receive part of the conscious listening?
Being aware of the stuff that's coming in.
Nope. This is the stereotypical thing which guys are not good at, which is a guy comes home from work, puts his nose in a newspaper, a book, a TV, a screen, and the wife is talking to him, and he's not really receiving her to fully communicate, I'm only focused on you to the exclusion of everybody else, I'm listening to you actively. Versus, I am doing my own little thing. I'm looking at my phone, and blah, 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 and I hear some words coming from your general direction. It's a lack of reception. So number one is to consciously do activity, actions, visual cues to receive the person. I am now giving you my undivided attention. Principally, looking directly at the person, not from the side, not indirectly, but boom. But not creepily either, obviously. You know, not like a... Also not good. That's not a good reception. A positive, warm reception. Two. What was number? Appreciate. What's appreciate mean? How do you appreciate? Maybe you don't agree with the person saying.
You nod your head. You big uh-huh sounds. You make it seem like you are actively a part of.
Right. You're giving the person cues that what they're saying, you're truly receiving. And you're appreciating the sense that you are taking the time to fully engage their conversation. Number three, summarize. What's that? Why is that very important, conscious listening?
So, repeat what the person told you, like show that you've actually understood what they were telling you?
Correct, which communicates to the person like, hey, I hear what you're saying, I understand, and I think I understand what you're saying, so it also to yourself sees if you really absorb the material, and B, you're communicating your value in the other person's effort and message. And last one, what's the last A?
Ask,
which means what?
Communicate something about it that you want to know more because it's personally important to you.
Correct. Okay, so I felt that was very good. Now, obviously, we got to take this to the Parsha. Alright, so let's... Alright, so, Danielle, read the first pasuk of the Parsha.
Vayikra el Moshe vayedaber Hashem elav me'ohel moed lemor. And Hashem called to Moshe, speaking to him from the Ohel Moed, the communion tent, to say, or he said.
Right, what is redundant or strange or weird about this pasuk?
He's saying, he called to Moshe, and then he said, Hashem said to him, and then Lamor again, he said. So
right.
Three times it's saying that he is articulating something.
Right, so that is obviously strange and redundant. First of all, unclear, in other words, with the extra phrase and phrases, it's unclear what's really happening. A, you know, why the additional languages, you know, what's being added. Because typically, one of the most common verses in the Torah is, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, and God spoke to Moshe saying. One of the most common verses of the Torah. This is very unusual. He calls to him, then he speaks to him. So, this is not only Danielle's question, but it's also Rashi's question. And not only is Rashi's question, but it's also from the Midrash. Going back, this question goes back thousands of years. Okay, so let's get in on the Rashis. All right, there's two Rashis I want to delve into today. All right, Danielle, since you asked the question, you get to hear Rashi's approach.
Great. And Hashem called unto Moshe. All oral communications of Hashem to Moshe, whether they're introduced by Daber or Emor or by Tzav, were preceded by a call to prepare him for the forthcoming address.
All right, so interesting enough, so he's the Sifra, which is a core collection of Tanaim's collection of the oral law, says that whenever implicit in the rest of the Torah is a calling first, even though it just in this parsha says it calls. You know what I'm saying? It says the Vayikra is implicit in other places. Okay, what is it? Let's go on. What's the bottom line?
It is a way of expressing affection, the mode used by the ministering angels when addressing each other. As it is said, and one called unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts.
Right. So it says, Vekara ze el ze, they call one to another, ve'amar, and say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem, Tzvot, Malok, Ar, Kavadol. The Kedusha prayer. So, the word of Vekara ze el ze, calling to one another, a calling is a term of endearment. All right, so we have to, which of course, the rule of thumb about whenever you get a Rashi, if the Rashi has an implied question, which is why the extra term of calling, he will give you an answer, but what does it always spawn? This is like Rashi 101. Rashi's dealing with an implied question. He doesn't say the question openly, but he's addressing the question here. He gives his gives a solution. What does it always spawn?
More questions.
More questions, because his answer is not, rarely is Rashi's answer obvious or immediate or, obvious or intuitive. Okay? So all it does is it pushes the question. All right, now, okay, so what was the reason for the word kara calling? Oh, that's implied by all the rest of the, it's a precondition of all the other modes of communication of God to Moshe. But it's a term of endearment, as we see by the ministering angel. So that brings up a question: is what are the obvious questions?
Why did the angels need to express affection for one another?
Correct. One. What else?
Why does God need to express affection for Moshe?
There you go. In other words, if Moshe is to be the lawgiver and communicate the message, or you know, as I wrote, why is this call necessary? Just download the message. In other words, Moshe, plug in whatever that prophetic experience is, get the download, disseminate. Apparently, it's not so simple. All right, we'll go on. Let's tackle the next Rashi. Okay, Danielle again.
And he called unto Moshe. This implies that the voice went on and reached it Moshe's ears only, but all the other Israelites did not hear it. One might think that for the subsections there was also such a call. It however states, and Hashem called unto Moshe and spoke to him.
Right.
Thus intimating that a dibur, a complete section had, was preceded by a call, but not the subsections. And what purpose do these subsections serve? Why are the larger sections broken up into smaller ones? So you've motioned an interval for reflection between one division and another, between one subject and another, something which is all the more necessary for an ordinary man receiving instruction from an ordinary man.
Okay, So a couple things. So he's in this. So Rosh is giving another answer. What does the word kara also mean? What's his first point? That implies he called out. That means that in Moshe's experience, it was like a voice calling out to him. He heard the voice, but who? But what about everybody else? What about everybody else?
It was just for Moshe to hear.
Right, so nobody else heard that, which of course, is, well, why not? Why didn't nobody else hear the voice? A. And B, whenever it says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'amor, and God spoke to God, So when is there a kriya and when is there not a kriya? When is there a calling? When is not a calling?
There's a kriya when there's a new piece of big information that Hashem's going to communicate to Moshe.
Correct, but then it's broken up into subsections. What's that all? Why is it not one? In other words, the Torah. You'll have what they call a little partio. In other words, they'll start the paragraph on a new sentence. You know, making a distinct paragraph. Why are they broken into subdivisions? Just say one long paragraph.
Because then, how is Moshe supposed to be able to process it, remember it, and then how is he going to really internalize it? So then he could go teach it to Aharon. You know, if it's one big monologue, it's a lot harder to digest.
Right. So that's exactly the point. The reason is that the way that it's organized in the Torah is conveying the subsections unit, because God wanted to give, in other words, it wasn't given one download. He would get a unit, and Moshe would have time to think about it, reflect upon it, and then they get another section. I don't know, now what Rashi doesn't comment here is, did Moshe get to ask him questions, etc.? Was there a dialogue in there? But certainly, it wasn't a massive. It wasn't like a massive data download of information that he's now going to somehow magically knows. He is getting information like a student gets information, which is a unit absorbed, then moves on to the next unit. Not getting everything. Okay, so. The question really is, what are we supposed to take away from this? Why is, what is the necessity? Let's back up the question that was let's see if we can take a stab at the question that Moshe Chaim brought up. So why is there a Kriya component, a calling to Moshe? What is it trying to accomplish? And I will preface the question specifically what we learned from this expert, sound expert of Julian Treasure. That actually gives you a number of insights that might be helpful to understand the phenomena of Kriya. What's happening?
Can I address it as a teacher?
Say it again?
Can I take a stab at it as a teacher?
Please.
So first there has to be a relationship between the teacher and the students. The student has to be given information and shown how it's meaningful, given time to process it, and then so on, and then keep continuing down that path. The emphasis is always on the student learning, not the teacher teaching.
Okay, true. But what is what this Rashi is even talking about, a precondition to that?
The relationship.
One of the best lines, which those who know me have heard countless times from Teddy Roosevelt, but I'm going to repeat it again. A person does not care how much you know until they know how much you care. So that gets into the idea of expressing affection. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest Jew of all time, the greatest mind of all time, apparently, the relationship between God and Moshe as a teacher, even as the master, greatest prophet, and God, people sort of imagine as it's like Moshe has a special T1 line to God, and he gets the data. You know, it's like you're downloading a file. Bing! Done. No, it's more what Rashi's bringing out, what the Midrash is bringing out, is that God is functioning, as we say in the morning blessings about from Hamelamed Torah. God, Baruchat Hashem, Hamelamed Torah L'mo Yisrael. God who teaches his Torah to the nation of Israel. God functions as a teacher. So the Kriya component, which this Rashi says is actually implicit throughout the Torah, is sort of building that rapport, that affection with the prize student, in this case, Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? Because that's a precondition for the mind to maximize the knowledge. You know what I'm saying? In other words, going back to what Julian Treasure pointed out, there has to be the receiving, there's the appreciating, you know, there has to be a sense of getting the psyche open and ready for careful conversation, careful information, deep wisdom, to coin a phrase of, you know, the phrase of in our modern environment, to maximize mindfulness. Okay? So that's the dimension of what? The chiba dimension, the affection dimension. A. Second dimension, as what Moshe Chaim pointed out, is that no matter, even Moshe Rabbeinu is the great mind, the great student, but doesn't mean that he can't process all the data of the entire Torah in one shot. So the Torah the material gets organized into neat to eat treats, sections and subsections, and that one opportunity that Moshe had a time to break to really digest that information. Okay, now what is that relevant to us? Why is it relevant to us? And I'm going to get into the Rambam in a moment. Why is that critical for us?
If you want to be heard, you have to listen.
But the goal here is not... First of all, that is completely true. But the goal here is... What is the subject matter here, really? What's the goal of this entire subject matter?
It's two parts. It's Hashem communicating to Moshe and how Moshe is going to communicate to the Jewish people.
Yeah, so what's the... Those are two aspects of what?
Listening?
Well, that listening is how, in a certain sense, it's happening. But listening to what? The topic here is how is wisdom communicated? And Julian Treasure, at the way, way end, the last part of the clip, point out, he says, in all the religious traditions, core to the religious tradition is a very careful and deep listening. What these Rashis are unpacking for us is that Moshe is getting not a wisdom, but the wisdom, which has every word is. We're basically talking about one word here tonight. The one we're talking about, the one word is Vayikra. We got one word. The title of the parsha and the title of the book, we're just working on that one. Which Rashi, and I didn't even do all the Rashis. I picked two of the Rashis on the one word. Okay. Because the main, what Rashi is bringing down from the Chazal is that if you want, in order to send and receive, send and communicate wisdom, it's not such a simple thing. And in fact, everything is really pushing against that. As that expert said. We are in a distracted world, and we hardly pay attention, and we don't have patience, and all the reasons that you guys gave. Okay, so even Moshe Rabbeinu, the great mind, there's a derechiva. There has to be a sense of a loving environment. Can't be any harshness. Has to be a warmth there for him to receive the wisdom. A, two. The wisdom has to be organized in a fashion that is digestible, and every unit can be then reflected upon, thought very deeply about, and then after that's done, go on to the next unit. And they say, and Rashi makes a kal v'chomer. What's a kal v'chomer? Classic Talmudic argument. What's kal v'chomer? The kal v'chomer argument.
It's related to, if something is easy, the easiest interpretation, if something is, I don't know how to explain it, is based on what is easy and what is strict.
How would the Kal V'Chomer apply in this case? Rashi gives a Kal V'Chomer based upon this.
It's extrapolating. We know this, so therefore we know that.
Since we know this by the minor case, it certainly applies to the major case. So if this approach of communication of wisdom applies between God and Moshe, okay, that's the most loftiest of God and the greatest mind, Moshe, if these necessary prerequisites are present. So certainly, if you're communicating to anybody else, whether it be a child, a friend, a colleague, certainly you have to be sensitive to all these factors. Start with a warmth and a sense where people can be open to reception, and communicating in a way that it's absorbable, subsection, and having a sensitivity and a respect and having a understanding of how people process information. A kal vachomer. Now, based upon this, this now translates into actually, ironically, to the world of halacha. Here we go. Not just a nice little midrash. So the Rambam has a section in his first of his 14 books of the Mishneh Torah called Sefer Amad, the Book of the Knowledge. He has a section called Hilchot Deot, Laws of Character Traits. It's 7 chapters long. It's a classic. It's available online. It's a great, but it's something like, again, just as there's careful listening, conscious listening is understanding. Certainly, the twin of conscious listening, of course, is critical reading. Okay, I'm always hawking you about that. All right, so the Rambam reduces, and we're going to read this about the mode of speech of the chacham, of the wise person. Okay, which of course all of us here aspire to be. Okay? So let's have somebody read the Rambam here. Okay, Sean.
All right. A Torah scholar should not shout and scream while he speaks, like animals and beasts. And he should not raise his voice excessively. Rather, he should speak pleasantly with all people.
Stop. Now, so what's his first point?
Let's speak calmly, not like shouting, not don't raise your voice.
Why?
That's like animals. That's like the...
People turn off to aggression. They don't have a relationship to you. They're defending themselves against you.
Right. So what the Moshe Chaim, one concept, I think, is certainly, it elicits if you have somebody screaming, it elicits whether it be a shutting down response or a combative, aggressive response in return. It does not foster a conscious listening. Okay, and so what should he? So what is the what's the mode? How should a chacham speak? And by the way, as I said, this is not only the chacham. He or she is supposed to be on a higher level. But this is something which is certainly an aspiration for everybody. You know what I'm saying? It's not just him, or you know what I mean. But what's the Why should they not raise their voice excessively? You know, why should he speak pleasantly to all people? It's a converse of what we just said. And it fits into what we just said before in Vayikra. What's the analogy?
We're showing affection. He's trying to develop a relationship with your audience.
Correct. In other words, the manner of speech of... The Hebrew word is nachas, benachas.
Benachas.
Right, in a pleasantness. So because nachas, what's the definition of nachas? It's a tonality, it's a word choice that people find pleasing and accepting. And they're more likely to be open to the message. Okay, let's go on.
But in speaking pleasantly, he should be careful not to distance himself such that he appears like a haughty person.
Okay, so he's talking about using like a terminology, even speaking pleasantly, but using a very like super academic, hot, you know, kind of words. So he's speaking pleasantly, but he's using like SAT words. I'm using, you know what I mean? Which makes him seem like the word in English would be pompous. You know, even though he's speaking softly, but if he's coming off as being, you know, using fancy schmancy words, you know, again, that's going to be context driven. Obviously, if he's making a presentation at Harvard, he'll use one set of vocabulary words. If he's speaking to the fourth grade class at the local yeshiva, that'll be another word choice, obviously. But the key point, it's not simply the volume and the tone. The word choice also can't be a wedge, because you can use words that make the guy come off as a some pompous person who automatically you hate.
Well, this also means he has to have an awareness of his audience, though.
Big time, bigly. Yes, he has to be very careful. Again, going back to the Vayikra point. The Vayikra point is. A is a bringing in with a chiba, a love, and it's speaking in a measured fashion where it could be fully accepted. Okay? Go on.
And he should be the first person, the first to greet all people so that they derive pleasure from him.
Okay, this, by the way, classic situation. Visualize the scene. You are walking down 86th Street. You're walking toward Amsterdam. Another person is walking from Amsterdam on 86 toward Columbus. And it becomes like a conflict, you know, in the city of Dodge. Who's going to say Good Shabbos first? Now, why would somebody not want to say Good Shabbos first? First of all, has everybody felt that tension? You're walking in opposite directions. Who's going to start? Have you seen that before? Have you felt that before? What is that tension all about? Why would a person not want to offer the first Good Shabbos or the good morning first?
Know the person?
Yeah, so if you know the person, so why don't you start off, hey Joe, how you doing? What is it, the reason the guy's not starting first, what does that imply? How does he feel?
Shy, embarrassed?
One possibility, but obviously he's not talking about a perfect stranger. We're talking about
the guy's too ego, too high up in his on his horse to say good Shabbos to somebody?
Well, in other words, that guy should say good Shabbos to me first. In other words, there's a little bit of an ego battle. Who should be, initiate? Who should say good Shabbos first to whom? That guy should recognize my greatness and say good Shabbos to me first. And the other guy's saying, that guy should accept my greatness and say good Shabbos to me first. So people walk in there, you see it. You've seen it before. They're walking, and then it becomes uncomfortable, and they both say it like at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Have you seen this phenomena? Who has seen this phenomena? If you walk around on Shabbos in Jewish communities, who's going to say good Shabbos? There's always a little bit of attention about that, especially if you don't, and certainly if you don't know that person, right? So I'll just walk by, don't say anything. That's in my book, that's below industry standard. Just know that.
That's called Brooklyn.
Okay, that's not cool. The problem is that there's so many Jews, people don't want to say Good Shabbos 500 times. I understand that. So they say Good Shabbos to nobody. But, you know, and out of town, if you go to out of town, there's so few Jews that they will, not only will they say Good Shabbos to you, but they'll come and talk to you and how long you're visiting for, because they know all the four Jews, and you're obviously the fifth Jew, so they feel that they got to know, you know, how long you're in town for, who do you know, where are you staying at, you got a meal, blah, blah, you know, and they get up into your personal space. So, but they mean it in a very affectionate manner. So, with the Ram saying that, but that the Machtim Shalom Lechol Adam, person, the Chacham should be, which taken from Pirkei Avos, should just step out of the ego battle and be a person who's trying to create societal harmony by warmly welcoming all people first. Okay? All right. Let's keep on going.
And he should judge every person favorably, repeat the praises of his fellow, and never his disgrace. Love peace and pursue peace.
Go on.
If he sees that his words are constructive and will be heard, he should speak. And if not, he should remain silent. How is this? He should not attempt to appease his fellow in the moment of his anger, nor question him about his vow at the time he made it. Rather, he should wait until his mind has cooled down and he is calm. He should not console him while the deceased lies before him, because he is agitated until he has buried the deceased, and so on for all similar situations.
Okay, this over here is a very important, I'm going to underline this. Get my little annotator over here. Okay. Okay. So this is gold. Over this is something that which if to the extent that you can incorporate this in your life, it will just bring dividend. Oh, one second. I got to get it right here. One second. Bear with me here. Select. Here we go. So I want to highlight this part. Okay. I'm trying to futz with this whole thing here. Give me a second. What happened to there?
You can't just use the highlighter tab?
Why is my highlighter tab not going? Oh, boy.
It's the little AB next to the, below the uppercase and lowercase.
Next to the red, to the left of the red.
Yeah, that, the little yellow one. Left, go left, further left. There.
One more.
Right there, here, like
the
right
little yellow.
I don't have it. That's weird.
Oh, we see it.
Your cursor's like right over it.
Hold on. I have after mouse.
To the left of that, next one over.
Select.
Other way.
I don't have anything left. That's weird. I'm not even seeing that.
You're not seeing the little AB with the yellow line under it?
I don't know.
Oh, we see your whole toolbar. That's so strange.
Okay. Anyways, we'll have to. I'm gonna use this part. If he sees words are constructive and will be heard, he should speak. If not, he should remain silent. Okay, that is the critical principle. Let me unpack that a little more. Sounds kind of obvious, but you have to understand something. That going back to the other statistic we brought up earlier, that 80% of what's said online is from the person out. It's like sort of like self-broadcasting. There's a big emotion in man to speak. Not to hear, but to speak. All right? And it's not so important. And as long as the person has an audience, they're happy. Not so much that they are really truly heard. But the Chacham is about transmitting knowledge, transmitting values. So if he sees that whatever he's going to say will not be heard at all, he does not say a word. And this takes tremendous restraint. Let me give you a couple scenarios. You're in a family event, and you see something that's not proper. Okay? Whatever it may be. And you want to comment so much. And you know that there's nobody there who's going to take your comment positively. It will not be productive, you know, you will not be received at all positively. It's very hard to restrain that desire to comment. We as Jews are commentators. We love to comment. And because we like to be seen as being smart, you know, people who see, great observations. Here, the Chacham is focused on communication. He wants to have the person in to be an open, warm situation. He wants to communicate the knowledge in the extent that it could be fully absorbed. If the person's angry, if the person's upset, if the person's in a fight situation, he says nothing. It sounds very easy, very hard to pull off. All of us have, I'm going to speak about myself, I myself have, you know, whether it be discussing with the wife, family members, etc., making a comment that we know it's not going to be heard, but we just are ourselves upset, or we want to make the point, we want to finish the argument, we want to litigate the fact, we just have to put that last comment in, which only makes the situation worse. So instead of the possibility of the person being open to the idea, they in fact are more closed off from the idea. So not only did you not achieve the goal, you actually cemented the opportunity from ever happening in the future, or it takes a long time to therapeutically get back to the point that you were once at. So the point of the matter is that the point of the whole parsha, the point of the first word of the parsha is giving us a tremendous insight of communication. And I'm going to summarize it. Number one, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Adon HaNaviim, the master of prophets, it was important apparently for his psyche to feel a calling, that there was some sort of an affection, that there was some sort of, that God had a personal interest in Moshe Rabbeinu qua person. Whatever that really means, I'm not quite sure we can distill that, what that means. But there, that seems to be a element there. A calling. That's one point. And two is speaking in a way that can be fully absorbed and appreciated. So that's why there are sections and subsections organized in a way that he can stop and reflect. Certainly that has to be done when you're communicating with all your people. Third point that we walk away with is the idea of being mindful of our own mode of speech, and it's how it's being received by others, and having the sometimes steely amount of control to be able to communicate, and more often than not communicate when the word will not be received. When it's not a, what they call, there are teachable moments, and there are non-teachable moments. And just because you have a great insight, and just because you have a great comment, does not mean it's the time or place. Because if the person is not emotionally there, you're wasting your time. Not only are you wasting your time, you're making it worse. And it's something which is very, very challenging. Very, very challenging. So those are just a couple of ideas, literally, from the first word of the Parsha. So today we learned the first word of the Parsha. You got to start small and build from there. I mean, obviously it's much more, but because as we learned from the first Rashi, the word Vayikra is actually implicit, according to the Chazal, in many other sections of the Torah, that God had to sort of bring Moshe into a dialogue. Also, is that the voice of prophecy, obviously the other people were on the level to hear it. That's another thing. Another idea that we learn is that many times there are messages out there, insights out there, that, going back to what Julian Treasure pointed out, that we're not really engaging in conscious listening to really apprehend the subtle messages. And if we want to have, as he articulated this, listening to create conscious listening to create understanding, it requires a disciplined listening. And that, of course, really is, by definition, a listening to live. And that's really what we see that from, and the example that the Chazal underline is Moshe's, God's communication to Moshe of the totality of the laws of the book of Vayikra and beyond. And that's what the Parsha kicks off with. All right, guys, I will see many tomorrow. By the way, we have a guest lecturer, Rabbi Menachem Lieber.